for joining us, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Wednesday morning. And we know that May is Mental Health Month. We've actually talked about it a fair number of times throughout the month from a variety of different talking points. We also talk about mental health on the show a lot through talk about our justice system, homelessness, addiction. Some of those hot topics are very intertwined. They're huge issues in Saskatchewan, and everyone has an opinion on what works best to help people in the province, whether they want to protect their own safety or help those that need help. When we talk about making Saskatchewan better, there's lots of different ways that you can do it. I'm happy to say this gives a good name to lawyers, because there's a lawyer who is part of trying to make that positive change in Saskatchewan when it comes to mental health and how we work with and handle situations where people who have mental health concerns, they are not mentally well, are involved in community crime. They could be involved in victimization. They could be involved in a number of things. Drew Hitchcock is a Regina lawyer and was co-creator of the Regina Mental Health Court, a court that a lot of people probably don't even realize exists. And I'm happy to have Drew Hitchcock joining me in studio. Drew, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you've been practicing law for how long now? Quite a while.
Yeah, since 2003, so 22 years, minus a year that I took off, so 21 years.
So 2003, and you started off, you did a lot of your work working with legal aid, am I correct, or pro bono work?
Well, I started as a public defender at legal aid in 2009, so I was in private practice for a few years before that, and then eventually I got onto legal aid, and I was there for 14 years.
What did you learn in that time? Because I know you're back into private practice now, but doing work through legal aid has to give you a completely different perspective for a variety of reasons. What did you yourself learn in that time?
Oh, that's a tough question for just one or two things. One thing that stands out to me is, like, I grew up in Regina. I didn't grow up wealthy, but I didn't want for anything. I was middle class. I didn't realize the extent of the suffering that exists in the city until I was actually on the front lines working for people who were, you know, indigent and poor and dealing with addiction and crazy mental illness. And so I suppose working for legal aid taught me that, you know, fundamentally we're not all that different. Like, I find that anyone who works in the criminal justice system, or most people, they're there because they want to respond to suffering. A lot of people have a sense of what right and wrong and wanting to help. And we have different ideas of how to do that. Some people become police officers, some people become prosecutors, some people become probation officers. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think most of us are trying to help people and make the world a better place. So it's a mistake to see, you know, the crown and the police as the enemy.
Right. We're chatting today with Drew Hitchcock, a Regina lawyer working for Pfefferly Law. Now, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Because Brian Pfefferly is on our show quite often. I always appreciate having him on. And it was him that was telling me a little bit about your story, specifically with Regina Mental Health Court, which is why we reached out. So do you think you've brought something from those years doing that work through legal aid into now your practice? That is it a compassion? Is it an understanding? Is there a different approach that you bring to your work as a result of that time that you spent doing legal aid work?
Well, I certainly understand the inner workings of the system better, but it's really not that different. It's just, when you work for legal aid, you have a secure government salary and a pension. When you're in private practice, you have to kind of eat what you kill. But the actual going to court, preparing for a case, is not that different. Mm-hmm. I have different stresses now. Like, at legal aid, I had a higher caseload than I do now, but I also never worried about, you know, how much I was going to make that month when I was at legal aid. With respect to the mental health court, I mean, I can tell you how that came about. So
that is my next question is, yeah, you know, where was the inception of that?
Well, you asked me about the compassion. I do think I have a lot of that, but I think most of that comes from my parents and my upbringing than my work at legal aid. I think that part of me made me gravitate towards working at legal aid. But so in the criminal law, the only time mental health formally comes into play is when someone is so sick that they don't understand the difference between right and wrong, or they don't understand the proceedings. So part 20 of the criminal code deals with people who are either unfit to stand trial or not criminally responsible for what they've done due to a mental disorder. So in order to get to that level, you have to have a very profound and severe mental illness. And from a pragmatic perspective, you have to be facing extremely serious charges, because the result of being found criminally insane is state supervision, including a committal to a mental institution for an indeterminate period. So as a lawyer, you don't want to send a client down that path unless they're looking at a very serious sentence. Now, that said, there are lots of people who have serious addiction, who have mental health issues that lead them to commit crimes, or at least partially responsible for them to commit crimes. And also it makes it more difficult for them to respond to what the sentencing is trying to achieve, dealing with police, dealing with probation officers. They may not fully understand the proceedings, and they may not be capable of basically internalizing the lesson that they're supposed to internalize, when that is the theory of punishment. And so it would be up to an individual judge in an individual case to get evidence about mental health and decide whether that person's mental health impacts their sentence. So the mental health court was set up as a way to take people who have those illnesses out of regular docket and put them in a different court where the proceedings are slowed down. So a normal sentencing will take place in half an hour in a docket court. For someone with schizophrenia who is on the street and in need of assistance, we can drag that out for several months. And basically, the people who work and do the actual God's work on the street with people in need would come to the court, and there would be a meeting prior to court starting where everybody signs a confidentiality agreement, and the Crown Prosecutor, defense counsel, which was myself at the time, the judge would hear from these workers to figure out what do they need. How do you word a probation order that's actually going to work, that they're going to be able to follow, and that's
like
going to
not set them up to fail, essentially?
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, the judge gets personal information about the person and can ask them how they're doing. The other benefit was there were a whole bunch of people that were not going to the doctor, that didn't have a doctor, but the police would be arresting them every month or every 6 weeks. And when they got to the mental health court, they would be put in touch with people from the adult mental health clinic, and some of them would end up getting help and getting housing. So how it started was there was a committee, people from the Canadian Mental Health Association. The primary driver was a retired judge named Clifford Toth. And then Elizabeth Hiltz, who's now the assistant deputy attorney general, I think she was a senior Crown Prosecutor at that time. She and I and Judge Toth were on this committee.
Was there an appetite? Clearly there. I mean, you feel like this is an important thing to do. You list the reasons just now why. Was there a willingness from all sides to do it clearly? And was there models that you could look at to help shape what this would ultimately look like?
There were models. There were larger centers had mental health courts up and running by the time Regina had ours. We didn't have any funding at the start, so we just kind of did it off the side of our desk. So like, I would have my regular trial practice, and then I would do the mental health court on the side. And I think this, it was the same for Ms. Hiltz. So there were other centers, larger centers had actual resources in terms of, like, if a judge wanted an assessment from a psychiatrist, there would be a psychiatrist to do the assessment. We never had that at the beginning. What we did have is a whole lot of people who were willing to give their time because they wanted to try to make a difference for people. And I think around that time, the Regina Police even had dedicated officers who were specifically trained to deal with mental health calls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was PACT, I think it was called.
Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah.
The police and crisis team.
Yeah. And so, I'm not a police officer, so I can't talk to how they do it, but generally speaking, a police officer responding to a call wants to have as much information about the person as they can have so that they can, you know, plan an appropriate response. And people that have schizophrenia, people that are consistent drug users, those create challenges for individual officers. So specifically trained officers dealing with a crisis situation, it was hoped would, you know, lead to better outcomes mm-hmm. in terms of less conflict with the police.
Right.
And then once they're, you know, in the system, we try to carry that forward because you want to, as far as possible, try and help people create positive change. And some of it is just, you know, harm reduction and conflict management. But there is a lot of problems with especially people that have schizophrenia and are using drugs. They would constantly lose their housing because a lot of the housing that they would have restrictions on you can't use drugs there. Some people use drugs to self-medicate. Some people are addicted, whatever it is. Once they're on the street, then they're out of touch with the authorities. And by the time the authorities are back involved, it's the police. And I remember we had one presentation given to us about the managed alcohol program when Sask Help brought that in. The idea was, you know, you could take 5-10 people, and those 5 or 10 people would account for a tremendous amount of police resources and emergency room resources, because the police would be arresting them all the time. They'd be drinking hand sanitizer, doing all sorts of unhealthy things. And so the idea was, if you give them housing and you, I guess, mitigate their addiction, I understand.
A measured amount of supplied alcohol, basically. Yeah.
That the results, just from a pure economic perspective, were a drastic reduction in costs, because they were no longer having to get arrested and go into the emergency room. And I'm not going to stand here and sit here and say that there isn't arguments on both sides of that. I mean, like, giving people alcohol when they're addicted can arguably seem to be giving up on them. But, you know, when someone is using hand sanitizer and Lysol, it's an improvement, I guess, to get them in a house.
For sure. Drew Hitchcock is my guest, the Regina lawyer, co-creator of Regina Mental Health Court. Can you give us an example? Can you tell us, you know, no identification, obviously, but a story, a success story, and how successful this court has been, this mental health court in Regina?
I don't actually have, like, anything beyond anecdotal evidence, which I suppose is what you asked. But one of the things that struck me is how much people responded to, you know, like, basically what we would do is they would be coming in every 2 weeks or every month for an update, and the judge would give them a talking to and encourage them and try to find out what was going on in it. You know, when you go into a court, there's all sorts of rituals. The judge sits up higher. The judge wears special clothes. You have to stand up when he or she comes in the room. So the mental health court process kind of humanized the court, the judge, mm-hmm. and the relationship with the accused. And it had tremendous. I remember one person, this dovetails with the managed alcohol, but he's well known to police in the city. He was getting arrested for petty crimes all the time and on the street all the time. And there was one story after he got into the managed alcohol program, just prior to that, he was arrested, I think, for stealing a pair of pants from the bay. And the officer who, I wish I could remember the officer's name, because the person does deserve tremendous credit, but the officer asked him, you know, "Hey, why did you steal the pants?" And he said, "Well, my pants are ripped and I don't have any other pants." So the next day when he was released, the police officer had bought 2 pairs of pants and put it in his property. And it's funny. We can talk about institutions and setting up incentives to try and create outcomes for people. But so much in this world is just individual people trying to be a good person. And I remember that day. I always remember that day because, you know, like, as a lawyer, so much of my job is trying to hold the police accountable. I'm in an adversarial position with them a lot of the time, but I remember that moment as a very, very beautiful moment.
Yeah. Before I let you go, we've only got about a minute and a half left. Has this been replicated in the province? And if not, what's preventing it? If it's showing success, is it cost?
Saskatoon has one. I know that. Whether or not it's in other centers, I don't know. It may very well be that there's just not enough of a demand for it in a place, you know, some of the smaller centers just wouldn't have enough of a demand for it. Whereas Regina and Saskatoon, I would think, has a lot more. Moose Jaw might, I don't know if they have one, but smaller than Moose Jaw, Prince Albert, there probably just isn't the numbers for it. But Regina and Saskatoon have them. Saskatoon just had an expansion of theirs. Now they have a dedicated forensic psychiatrist who's doing assessments there. So it appears to be growing.
Very good stuff. And given the fact that we've been focusing this month on mental health, mental wellness, Drew, appreciate the work that you did as one of the founders. You listed a number of people that were involved in that, but these are absolutely making tangible differences in our province. And for that, we're very appreciative.
Thanks for having me on. It was an honor.
Great to have you on. Drew Hitchcock, Regina lawyer, working with Pfefferly Law, co-creator of the Regina Mental Health Court. Something, as you heard, that is not only yielding success, but has been able to be expanded in the province of Saskatchewan. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.